Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Super excited to be joined by Jonathan Sprinkle in the Houston Astros organization. Jonathan, how's it going, man?
Good, how are you?
Man, I'm doing great. Before we started recording, you were kind of telling me about why you had had to leave the Arizona Fall League, where you were there for a little bit. Before you talk about that, though, like, how was that experience in the Arizona Fall League?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I mean, meeting all the guys, a lot of the other organization's prospects, it was a lot of fun. Meeting guys like Kumar and Quentin and... guys like that who are top notch in other orgs. Like, it's kind of cool to bounce ideas off of each other and just to kind of see where everyone's head's at. And they're either new to their org or not, or have been in their org for a while. It's really kind of cool to see how everyone's pro experiences.
Everybody who's in the Arizona Fall League is legit. Like, it's kind of like an honor, kind of, so to speak, to like be representing your team. Usually it's about five or six players per team or per organization, I guess. Who's somebody who maybe stood out to you?
Freeman with the Rangers, he's a really good catcher, and he kind of stood out to me. Me and him worked a lot together in the bullpens. Our team was really talented, man. We had Henry with the Pirates, the Kumar with the Rangers, Freeman, Quentin Priester, Selby with the Pirates. I mean, we had Nick Gonzalez with the Pirates. I mean, we had a lot of top-notch guys. It was just fun. Like, it was cool because nobody kind of like took the, you know, mindset or mentality of like, oh, like I'm a top guy. Like, I'm going to kind of like do my own thing. Everyone was so supportive and everyone was so cool. And we were all kind of just one big group of guys that just like to have fun and just go play. A lot of the Phillies guys, Schultze, Lehmer, all those guys are like, we hung out a lot outside of the field. So it was just honestly like a big, like, obviously it's a showcase and you know, everyone do what they want to do, but just the camaraderie we had, Star with the Rangers, excuse me, D-Bob with the Rangers, Wolf. I mean, we had a lot of really talented guys, and nobody came across cocky or
there's not a lot of ego. It was just kind of, everyone's like there just to have fun. And
yeah, everyone checked their ego at the door, and it was just, honestly, it was one of my favorite pro ball experiences so far, just because everyone was just so unique in their own way, and it was just a lot of fun, man. I mean, I hate that I had to leave early for the injury I had, but I got to get it fixed for next season, and I'm not going to sit on my hands and wait for the end of the Fall League. So I wish all those guys the best, and I know all of them are going to do really well in the future.
Yeah, one guy I want to talk about in the Arizona Fall League, somebody you played with for like a brief amount of time in college, Evan Reifert. Dude, and I feel like I've mentioned him in the last three, four episodes because there's a couple of people I know him. He's just carving. Like, it's incredible for a guy like him and a guy like you, who both didn't go get drafted or anything, to be just representing your guys' organizations in the Fall League there.
So it's funny you bring up Ev. He's actually one of my best friends. He stays at my house, train together. I mean, me and him are really close. Ev's doing really well. And I couldn't be more proud of him. So this is kind of, me and him bounce a lot of mentality ideas off of each other, and me and him talk every day. He's actually probably coming over to my house after my surgery to kind of help out and do all that stuff when he's heading back home from the Fall League, because he's driving back. So he'll come by here and stay with us for a little bit. But my family loves him. He's a brother to me, and I wish that kid all the best. And I know he's doing good, and I know he had his struggles in the beginning of the year, and he went through some stuff, but hey, he's come out of it. He's come out of it stronger, and this is the best he's ever looked, in my opinion. And I've known him for 2-3 years now, so he's really talented, and his career is going to go a long way.
Yeah, and like you talk about the Rays and just the guys that they find, and when he got traded to the Rays, I messaged him, be like, look, dude, like, that's going to be so sick for you. Like, you're going to be so good with the Rays. Like, they're going to develop you so well. And just from, he was already carving with the Brewers and their org, but like now he's just taking it to a new level. And like I said, he hasn't given up a hit. And like, there's so many, you listed all the hitters that you played with and pitched with when you're over there in Arizona. There are some studs. And the fact that he hasn't given up a hit in Arizona, you know, it just shows how like dominant he's been, and good for him. Like you said, like he's been in the pod twice. He's a good guy. So I wish him the best too, man. It's awesome to see what he's doing over there.
Oh, I'm already giving him a hard time. Whenever I get back and healthy, I'm going to make sure that me and him are always been like super competitive against each other. And he obviously knows about me and what I'm kind of going through right now. So he's been really supportive and really cool about it. But I had to make sure to let him know that I'm going to be better than him whenever I come back. Yeah. And me and him have that competitive aspect against each other, because me and him have been doing training live ABs, all that together for the past like 3 years heading into spring training. So I'm going to make sure he gets humbled a little bit. And whenever I come back, I'm going to make sure he gets a little bit of that.
Yeah. The Astros, do they have their spring training in Florida as well?
Yeah. West Palm Beach.
Okay. Okay. I might have to go to Florida. I think it's going to be sweet. That's my plan. My plan is to go down there to Florida, record some in-person episodes. I'm going to have to get Evan back on. Another guy I want to talk to you, and like, it's kind of off topic, but somebody you also play with who's been on the pod, Luke Berryhill.
Berryhill, yeah.
Do you have any funny stories I can kind of DM him later about and just kind of poke fun at him?
Me and Luke have a good relationship. Luke's obviously caught me for honestly most of my pro ball career, and me and him have kind of moved up the ranks the exact same kind of timing. I've given him a hard time. He's given me a hard time. We're honestly just two buddies that just like giving each other a little hard time here and there. But no, he's an extremely talented hitter. He's a good catcher. He's very adaptive to kind of what pitchers want to do. One of my favorite things he does, he always brings his guitar on the road trip, and we always would have him do Simple Man, and that was easily everyone's favorite on the bus. So that's probably one of my favorite memories with him. But now me and him like to go get canes sometimes on road trips and all that. Me and him have a good relationship. So I wish that kid the best, and I know he's gonna be a stud.
Yeah, he mentioned that he takes out his guitar, and I'm like, I asked him like, what's the reception like? And he's like, oh, everybody loves it. Like, you know, it's such a cool experience just being able to take out the guitar and kind of rock out a little bit.
You know, what's funny is if he's on there again, he's not a fan of pop country at all. So compare, if you want to see a funny reaction out of him, compare him to a pop country artist, and he'll get kind of pissed. So
who is who would be considered like a pop country? Because I listen to some country, but like, I probably wouldn't tell you who's.
I'll have to get back to you on that. I can't remember the guy's name right now.
Because what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna send him a message and be like, look, Sprinkle told me that like this is your idol.
Yeah. do that, but let me get the name first.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he gets real. Because we made fun of him in Corpus about it, and he got upset, and it was pretty funny. But
okay, I'm gonna message him. I'm gonna DM him later. Be like, look, once we figure out the name, you have to get back to me, and we'll figure that out. Okay, so let's get into your injury. Like, what happened? Like, when did you start realizing, like, you know, maybe things are kind of off? Like, what kind of led to you figuring that out, that you're injured?
Probably more towards the later part of the year. I just like something just didn't feel right, and I didn't know what it was, and I honestly thought it was mechanically, or maybe that I was just kind of tired or needed a break or whatever. And then heading into fall league, I just kind of kept lingering, and I just couldn't put my finger on it. So I started going through mechanics, because I was walking a lot of guys. I didn't have my velo. I didn't have like just the command that I wanted that I usually have. And it just didn't really feel, I didn't feel like myself at all. So I was just kind of going down the rabbit hole of how do I feel down the mound? Like, why is my arm not whippy? Like, I knew something was wrong with my arm. I just didn't know what it was. And then when, you know, the discoloration started happening and my arm started getting swollen, I kind of like went into the trainer and I was like, I don't know what it is. Like, something's not right with me. I don't like, this isn't me. And
was
I,
this
I,
in I, Arizona or during like the end of the season?
That was in Arizona. Okay. When I finally kind of like, it didn't bother me until Arizona, but I knew something didn't feel right. Yeah. For a little bit at the end of the season, probably like the last month of the season. I just didn't feel like myself and my velo was kind of trending down. And obviously I know why. Yeah. And I know, like, you know, it's a pretty big deal. But I went to the trainer and I was just like, hey, like, my arm's kind of swollen. Like, I don't feel whippy. Like, it just feels heavy and like slow. And like, I don't know what's going on. Sent me to go get a ultrasound. Then they found the clot kind of like heading into my shoulder right here. And they got me at one of the doctors in Houston on the phone. And he was just like, hey, I don't like what I see. Like, pack all your stuff. Like, we're going to get you to Houston. We're going to get that out of your arm and we're going to figure it out from there. So flew to Houston that day, had the surgery in the morning to get the clot removed. They went through my arm kind of like right in, I don't know if you can see it, but
yeah,
went through
a little dot right there.
Yeah. Kind of went through, cleared it out right here, put me on some blood thinners and, you know, just kind of, I just actually got the date for my surgery today. So going to go in, get the rib removed and feel like myself again. And I'm honestly super excited. Like I knew I haven't felt like myself in a while, and just to get myself back to where I was and back to get my velo up, get my, you know, command where it needs to be, just feeling like myself again. And that was something that this year has been like a weird medical year for me. Yeah. And I've kind of had a little bit of a down year this year, but I know I'm going to come back next year and I'm going to get back to dominating. Like, I know I can. Yeah. So I got all the confidence in the world.
Love that.
I just got to get through the surgery and everything will be fine.
Yeah. So does it kind of make you feel maybe a little bit relieved knowing that, like, maybe if you weren't pitching well, it's just because of an injury and not just because maybe you didn't have it or whatever, like stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I talked to our pitching coordinator a lot about, and even our pitching coach in Corpus, because I just never felt like myself for most this year. And even before, you know, this all started bothering me, I had a huge stomach issue as well. So this year's been a very weird medical year for me. But yeah, kind of went through the ringer this year in medical stuff, because it's weird, because I'm usually a very healthy guy, and I usually, knock on wood, obviously, but like, I never really got injured. I always stayed healthy. I was always kind of a horse with innings. I was always able to eat up whatever I could. But definitely this year was kind of one of those years where it was like, just kind of a down medical year for me. But, and that's fine. And that's all. And that's the risk we take as athletes. And that's part of it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to sit here and say it's not part of it, because it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a sigh of relief, you know, to know that like most of this year I wasn't healthy. Cause I'll be honest with you, man, I left spring training at an absolute high. I mean, I was the best I've ever looked. I was dominating. My velo was at a high, at a personal high.
What were you hitting?
I was like 3-5. And my slider was up to 87, which is kind of crazy for the slider that I have. Cause I have a big kind of sweeping slider right to left. And I mean, I was striking out big leaguers. I was looking good. I wasn't walking guys. I had really good command. Everything felt synced up. And then the first part of the season, the first month of the season was really well for me. Then my stomach started bugging me in. I lost like 20 to 25 pounds in a month. It's been a weird medical year, man.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not BSing you here. I lost 20 to 25 pounds in a month. Then I had to like try and get back from that. Kind of rather quickly, because it was already middle of the season when we kind of figured it out. My weight's still a little down right now, but you know, got that kind of under control. And then as soon as that got, you know, under control, then my arm started, you know, swelling up, and I was just kind of like, whatever, you know, this year is what it is. Yeah. Whatever. I'm going to take it for what it is. I'm going to put it in the back of my head. I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to get healthy and I'm going to go back to what I'm doing. Because I I know I have it, and I know I have, and I have the utmost confidence in myself. I just got to get healthy first.
No, for sure. And that's good to have that confidence. You had mentioned, I think you had mentioned something about talking to Reifert about like bouncing off like ideas and like mental stuff.
Yeah. Me and him talk a lot about stuff like that.
So when you go through something like an injury and having a season where not everything went the way you wanted to go, like how do you stay mentally strong? Like, do you have any advice for guys out there?
Yeah, no, definitely you gotta take a break from baseball. And what I mean by that is you have to have a hobby of something else. You have to have a passion you enjoy somewhere else in the world. Because I'm not saying to not fully dive in and give everything you got into this game, because you have to at the level that we're at. Like, there's no other choice. But if you make baseball solely who you are, and if you make it the only thing that you're focusing on, you're going to burn out. And you're not going to have, like, me and Evan talk about golf all the time, and me and Evan golf all the time. Like that's our escape from it. And we have, you know, obviously that competitive aspect against each other. But, you know, when it comes to mentalities, it's like we both have seen each other at our best. So we obviously hold each other to that standard. But at the same time, like, baseball is not life. And, you know, we're human at the end of the day. And we have to, you know, support and love each other for what it is. And that's awesome. But at the same time, like, you got to give each other a hard time. You got to get your mind off of baseball. You got to be human. You can't sit there and be a robot and be all that 24/7, because you're going to get burned out. So the advice I got is just, you know, have fun, live life. Like, obviously what we do, we're very blessed to do it. And we worked extremely hard to get where we're at, but, you know, go hang out with friends, go play around. You gotta go play around somewhere. You gotta, you know, go play billiards. You gotta go do something. Like, just go, even if it's like, a lot of guys play, you know, COD or Apex, and a lot of guys golf, and a lot of guys have that extra hobby that just helps them kind of get away. And for me, it's music and golf. Like, I love doing that. Like, I'm a big music guy, and I love golf too. So
do you play also or no?
Do I play music?
Yeah.
So I actually do play the saxophone.
Okay.
Which is a fun little fact, but I'm not to the extent that Barry Hill's at.
Okay. He's always posting on Instagram, like, you know, the bars that he's performing at and stuff. So I thought maybe you and him might tag team a little bit and try to stretch out a little band.
Maybe someday me and Barry can get onto that, but that's more his realm on singing at bars and stuff. I don't have that confidence in my sax ability.
Nice. So let's get into, like, you growing up and stuff. Like, when did you start realizing you were a little nasty at baseball, maybe a little bit better than the rest, and you're like, all right, I can maybe make something out of this?
Honestly, I think that I knew I had a unique fastball, but I didn't know, like, what I was doing. I knew I just threw it, and guys just weren't hitting it. And I didn't really figure it out until college. Probably sophomore year was my breakout year. But I wasn't really recruited by a lot of D1 schools. I was kind of a lengthy, you know, tall guy who I was still trying to figure out my body and still trying to, like, get myself, you know, figured out.
Yeah.
But sophomore year, things started clicking. Like, I started understanding who I am. I went to Central Missouri, who is a very hardworking college, and nothing's ever, I mean, obviously a lot of colleges are, you know, nothing's ever given, but being a D1 kid, like, you kind of have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder.
What kind of numbers were you putting up in high school? Like, what were your stats looking like? Were you just carving?
High school, I was a starter. I was behind Cole Dunsing, who got drafted in the fifth round of the Angels. He's with the Dodgers now. But me and him were kind of the ones who punch in high school, which is a lot of fun. He's a good dude. I like him. We haven't really talked since, but he's a good guy. Then transitioned into the bullpen in college. Really liked the bullpen. I was a closer for the majority of college, but I kind of did everything out of the bullpen as well, just kind of depended on when they needed me.
What was that transition like? Or who suggested that, like, hey, you're a starter, but I think we're going to start throwing you out of the pen?
I was a two-pitch mix guy, and a lot of our starters in college had, you know, 3+, and I have that. So they kind of moved me over into the pen. Because they had a solid starting rotation when I got there as a freshman, but they wanted to throw me, so they put me in the bullpen, and it kind of just stuck since. And then I had a a couple starts junior year, but I honestly love like the bullpen more. I love high pressure situations, and I love closing games. I think the hardest outs are the last three.
That's what they say.
And I like being in that situation, and I like, you know, just my best versus your best. You know, let's go. You know, I've always loved that mentality and having that pressure. I just think it brings out the best in people, and you know,
yeah.
I've been a big fan of it.
So what do you do to get yourself hyped up then? Like, obviously as a reliever versus like a starter, there's a huge difference. I know guys who like, I've heard there's a couple guys I've talked to who like drown themselves, like in the Marlins organization. I don't know if you've heard about this. They literally just like breathe in water and it gives them like this like rush of adrenaline, smelling salts. Like, what do you do? Like, what do you do to get hyped up?
I mean, obviously you got your C4. I haven't even heard of a drowning yourself. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's a couple guys in Beloit, Wisconsin at the, Beloit, now they're the Beloit, not Snappers anymore, they're the Skycarp. But yeah, in the Marlins org, there's a couple guys, Josh Simpson, he's in AAA now with them. But they just get a cup of water and like, or a handful of water and breathe it in. I don't know why, but, and I'm going to do it sometime. Whenever I go down to spring training and I talk to the guys over there, I'm going to do it and see how it is. But okay, so you're a C4 kind of guy?
If it works for them, more power. Can't say I'm ever going to do that, but hey, more power to it. But honestly, like I'm not really the kind of guy that like needs to be hyped up.
Okay.
Like I take the mentality of like being very calm, cool, and collective with it. So like, I like to sink to the level of my training more than, you know, rise to the occasion, because sinking to the level of your training is way easier. Because if you try and rise to the occasion, you're either putting too much pressure on yourself or you're trying too hard. So in my eyes, when I try too hard, I suck, because I can't. Whenever I try and overdo something, it just doesn't. It's never worked really out for me. But whenever I'm in control of my emotions and in control of my breath, I'm able to do exactly what I want to do. So I'm way more of the like, just take a deep breath. If you need some C4, grab some C4. But I honestly don't really hype myself up that much, because I like to be in control of every part of my body. I don't like to, you know, I don't need the, you know, the jazz, like the little tingle down the spine or whatever it is. I just like knowing that like I have full control of what I'm doing right now. And, you know, like this moment's mine. It's not anybody else's. Like, this moment's mine. So I'm going to take it, and I'm going to, you know, sink to the level of my training and have it, because doing too much, in my opinion, can hurt a player.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So I've never heard of that. So it's sink to the level of your training. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I like that. So were you the closer in college, or was that just your reliever? And then sometimes you would close, or were you just like the dude who closed games?
I was the setup guy my freshman year, and then sophomore, junior year, I closed games. I kind of did everything out of the bullpen junior year, but obviously that was COVID year, so we kind of got cut short. But we were extremely good that year, and I have got most confidence to say that I think we would have won the whole thing that year. We were really good that year, and I think we were like 23-3 or 20-3 or something. Dang, like that.
That's crazy.
Oh, we were really good. And I don't think anybody was going to get in our way, because we wanted that national championship really bad. And there was no, again, like we kind of had the no ego, or, you know, everybody's nasty. Everybody knows it. Why don't we just have this brotherhood and camaraderie and just go do it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. You might have to teach me how to play saxophone, so that way when you're closing games in Houston, I could be like Timmy Trumpets or whatever his name is, just with the saxophone.
100%. I got you. I already got a couple songs that I'm going to use whenever I get up there. I already got a couple of them.
That's awesome. So what was maybe one team you like loved to face when you were in college? Like maybe one team where like the fans were a little chirpy, the players were a little cocky. Like, what was one team where you're like, all right, we just can't wait to shove against these guys?
That was Missouri Southern for us. Especially, we had a pretty good rivalry with them. And in the NCAA tournament, they actually, I had a good year. I had a really good year sophomore year. And in the NCAA championship, a lot of them, I can't remember if it was them or it was their fans, But somebody started a chant like after they won and they were going to face us, because I believe we were the number one seed. And they said, like, we want Sprinkle.
Okay.
And they were kind of chirping at me and whatever. So our coach was like, all right, whatever. We played them next round. And I think I went in like the third inning and I pitched like 5.2 or something like that day. And I had like 10 strikeouts. So I was pretty.
So you gave them what they wanted, but apparently it wasn't what they wanted.
Oh, I'm going to remember that game my whole life. Yeah, I was pretty jazzed up for that game. I was in a different little mode, but yeah.
Do you think you just maybe go just a notch higher or a different level of intensity when, like, those fans are chirping, like, that much at you?
It honestly doesn't really get to me. And I would say that was the only time where I kind of, like, heard it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, like, here we go. Like, yeah. Obviously, you hear a lot of crazy messed up stuff in the minors. Mm-hmm. Because morality goes out the window whenever you put on a jersey. But yeah. No, I get it, whatever. But honestly, it hasn't, like, that was the first point to where I kind of got, like, called out and I was all for it. The minors, it's kind of different because, you know, they're just chirping to chirp because they think it's fun. College, it's way more personal. And I don't know why. And I don't really get it. And I guess the big leagues, like, it goes back to being personal. But the minors, it just doesn't, it doesn't feel that way. It just feels like you're just chirping to chirp and, you know, it is what it is, whatever. And it's probably also due to the fact that we play so many games mm-hmm. that you're just kind of like numb to it and it doesn't really matter as much. But I've always thought that was interesting on why stuff feels way more personal in college than it does in pro ball. But I'm sure in the big leagues, it definitely flips the other way, but.
Yeah, you never know. And you mentioned the minors and stuff. Have you had any, like, funny fan interactions or maybe a game where maybe the fans were just a little extra chirpy or just funny, or maybe just, like, fans in your DMs, like, hey, give me some autographs? Like,
I actually have a good story about that. It was when I first got called up to Asheville last year, and it was my first outing, and I had a rough outing, my very first outing in Asheville, and God bless her heart, I don't remember her name, but like a grandma that was at the game DM'd me on Instagram, and she was this little old sweet lady, and this is the one that got to me not like angered, but like actually kind of like sat in my head for a little bit. Is she sent me a DM and she was like, hey, like, I'm a big tourist fan, like, I just want to, I know tonight didn't go the way you wanted, but like, it's a long season and I'm sure you'll be just fine. I was just like, and I was already mad because of my outing. And it just kind of sat with me for a little bit. And I was like, wow, I got a grandma telling me I suck tonight. Like that one kind of hits deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're in your feels and like, yeah, she's sending you another message like, hey, I know you sucked, but it's not too bad.
Keep your head up. She's like, all right, well. That was a funny one, but
at least she was encouraging.
Oh, she's a sweetheart, and she's a good person.
Have you met her in person? Like, you know who she was?
I know. I never met her in person, but I did see her a couple times at the field. So she's good, and she's got a good heart. But that one kind of sat with me a little bit, just because I was already, you know, upset about my outing. But I've actually gotten mad at a couple of fans because some of the fans that are in some areas just go way over the top.
Oh yeah,
and they bring in personal stuff into it, and it's just like, for me, it's just like, if you're gonna you know, chirp me, whatever, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like, leave my personal life out of it. Like, that's two different things for a reason,
for sure.
Like, you can chirp me on the field however much you want. If I throw a ball, you know, it's ball one, you know, that's fine. Like, like, chirp, whatever, like, I can handle that. But like, when you start bringing in personal stuff, that's where I kind of get upset. Or when you start, like, we had this situation happened at where were we at? We were at Oakland's place, the Rock Hounds.
Midland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were, we had fans throwing stuff at us in the bullpen. That really pissed me off too. That's the only part where like you can chirp as much as you want, but once you get physical and once you start bringing personal life into it, mm-hmm. that's where I draw the line. But
yeah, fans at games are crazy, especially the minor leagues, because like, they'll have like dollar beer nights or whatever, and like, fans are just going psycho. Some of them are in like college town and like, they just kind of hang out there. Have you had any, like, I've had guys tell me that like, fans have gone onto the bus after games and started just taking random pictures, and like, just, it's people had to like kick them off the bus. Like, just, fans are just psycho.
We've definitely had drunk fans around the bus, but I mean, I've experience a fan get on the bus. I think that would be, especially our group in Corpus, I don't think that would have flew very well. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, fans are crazy. Fans are crazy. Have you ever been like the, I don't know if, cause you're a pitcher, but maybe mm-hmm. like you're facing, I don't know if maybe your team does this, like the strikeout batter, or like the K batter, if, you know, if you strike out somebody, like you, everyone yeah. gets like a dollar beer or a dollar pizza or dollar whatever, maybe.
They usually just save that for hitters, okay. but no, and it's definitely kind of tough whenever one of your friends gets designated, you know, beer batter of the night, and they strike out and the fans go crazy, and it's just kind of like, ah. Because I'll be honest with you, like a lot of the hitters, like they're just like, well, I don't want to give these fans beer, so yeah. they definitely go into it with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But you know, I mean I get it. It's promotions, it's media, like I get it. Mm-hmm. Like it's fun.
Yeah, and like
one of your buddies gets called out for that.
Did any of your team's home stadiums do that? Like when you were the pitcher, did you face any of the K batters or no?
I didn't. No. Okay. We didn't really do much of that in Corpus.
Okay.
That was kind of more away series rather than home.
What is one city you've gone to, speaking of like the minor leagues and stuff, where you mm-hmm. just get off the bus and you just look around and you're like, where am I? Like there's a subway, there's a like one little tiny random like restaurant that closes at 3 p.m.
Yeah, there's a couple places. I would say that Midland's definitely one of them. That's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
I've been to Midland. It's hot. Like it is hot yeah. over there. It's like just oil. Yeah. That's all they do is just people. Oh, yeah. It's the middle of nowhere.
Honestly, the Texas League in general is. It's extremely hot in the Texas League.
Like, what is your favorite place to play? Where you're just like, all right, maybe I pitch a little bit better, or maybe like the fans are, or maybe it's just a nice area to visit.
Just from being from Kansas, I was always like, when we headed to Wichita and played them, like that was a lot of fun. Tulsa's a great spot. Mm. That place, that stadium is really good. Corpus is just so hot, man. It's so mosquito-y and muggy and. You know, I love our fans and I like the staff. It's just so hot.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough playing baseball when it feels like 108 outside every day. Kind of drains you. But what's another place that I really liked? Tulsa, Wichita. The Sod Poodles, the Amarillo. That place is an airport. That place
they the play at an airport.
Oh no, but it, oh. I mean by that is it's like the ball flies off the bat. Like,
oh, okay.
Like dangerously crazy. Like you hit it and you won't even hit a ball that hard. It's a home run.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that place is a pitcher's nightmare, but you know, it's for a hitter's dream. So yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. So you didn't get drafted, but obviously you signed with the Astros. Mm-hmm. Were there any other teams interested in you? Or was it pretty much the Astros?
I had other teams interested in me. The Orioles were interested in me. Who was it? The Orioles, the Cubs, Astros, Brewers, Braves.
Oh, nice. That's a good amount of teams.
Yeah, we like for so that year, obviously COVID year, it was kind of interesting because there was a 2-day dead period after the 5-round draft, and the Cubs were actually calling me during the draft, and they were like, "Hey, like keep your phone on, you know, like it's between you and another guy, like for our 5th-round pick," and I was just like, "Okay," and they ended up not taking me. But
Do you ever look at that guy who got drafted in the 5th round and just be like, "Man, I'm better"?
I was definitely a little salty over that for sure. But, you know, I hope that dude does, you know, everything he wants to do. But I was a little salty at the Cubs for that one. Not gonna lie. But, I like the Cubs. And it was kind of between the Cubs and the Astros at the end of the day, and the Brewers as well. So when free agency started, I had a lot of Zoom calls with teams, and I just really liked the way the Astros presented what they wanted to do with me. They had a plan. They had a plan of attack for exactly how they wanted me to get to the big leagues, and it was very professional, very thought out, very analytical. They knew everything about me. They knew my strengths. They knew my weaknesses. They knew just kind of how to make me a big leaguer, and that alone sold me. And it was just because I like the amount of effort it took for them to, you know, put all that together and then come after me and be like, we want you and what, like, whatever you want, just tell us and we'll make it happen. So, it was a really good meeting, and I'm very blessed and happy to be with the Astros.
No, for sure. And obviously the organization is like top notch, and like, they're playing in like 5 minutes in the World Series.
Yep.
So like how cool is it just being able to know that you're in an organization where they've been to the World Series so many times, or they're knocking on the door of the World Series like the last 5 years?
The culture is you can definitely tell it's just different. Like the winning culture and just understanding like how to make guys figures. Like what, like one of my good friends, like David Hensley, like he's DHing tonight. And, you know, he was a senior sign for $1,000, and I, you know, and that kid is absolutely balling right now. And I wish him, you know, all the best. And he's a stud, and he's going to be in the big leagues for a while. But, you know, a guy like, even taking a guy like that, you know, like, and just understanding the culture of what the Astros do and understanding like how they have a plan for everybody. And if the plan goes, you know, according, and they definitely adjust based off of like how life changes. Like for me, obviously, like I had medical stuff this year, so the plan changes a little bit, you know what I mean? So just being a part of the winning culture and understanding like everything that they do is so well thought through. It's very analytical. It's very just, you know, it, you know the right things are happening.
Mm-hmm. Is there a trickle down effect from like every organizational level, or you just kind of see that same process from like low A all the way to the majors?
I would definitely say like you can start to tell like when you're getting close and when you're kind of like moving up, and like especially when you're moving up, like a lot of guys in the younger levels are just kind of like trying to understand like what the Astros want to do and like how they want to do stuff, and if they want to learn a new pitch or do something a little different mechanic. You learn that, and then at each level you kind of, I know this is very generic, but like you move up and you understand, you master a skill, and then you master a different skill, and then you know master a movement or master a pitch, and when you get that down, you know, good things happen. Mm-hmm. And definitely take note of that. And like I'll give you an example. Like for me, like I had no idea my extension was one of the best in baseball. Like I had no idea, but this is something that they knew, and they knew it would be very effective for me based off of like where I stand and how I kind of go at hitters. So like I now know that's a big weapon for me, and I can use it to my advantage in different ways. Like, but you know, I had no idea even last year. Like I knew it was good, but I didn't know it was as good as what it is. So you definitely like find the little things about yourself that make you effective, and you hone in on those things, and you learn to use it to your advantage with every single pitch. It's not something to where it's just, you just solely rely on your talent. You solely rely on, you know, the feels that you have coming in. It's all about developing new feels. It's all about, you know, finding yourself and then refinding yourself and then going through each day of I'm going to attack this, this, and this. And then, you know, good things are going to come from it.
That's awesome. All right, so let's end on this. Obviously, you're going to go through a rehab process and get ready for spring training. Mm-hmm. Knock on wood, everything's good to go. What is your off season going to look like other than like rehab? Like, what do you do when you're not pitching or working out or training?
It's colder in Kansas City, so I'm not going to be able to golf.
That is true. That is true. I'm in the Midwest myself.
There you go. Honestly, like, I'm going to take a little bit of a step. Whenever I have surgery, I'm going to take a little bit of a step back and just kind of like focus on my family. And, you know, I got to take care of this little dog next to me. But I'm going to obviously root from my Chiefs, maybe go to a game or two.
I know you see my Raiders shirt on here. I don't know if I might have to kick you off.
No, I gotcha. But I'm gonna get back into it pretty hard whenever I start ramping it up again. I have a couple things in my mind that I want to work on and that I want to be able to do heading into spring training, because I feel like they'd be very effective for me. I'm already talking and working with people here in Kansas City on things that like they can help me with and how I can become better moving forward. I have a really good game plan. I'm talking to my pitching director all the time about stuff and how, what would this do with me? Would it help me? Would it hurt me? You know, stuff of that nature, but I'm going to kind of, whenever I get surgery, I'm going to take a step back for a week or two and just kind of allow myself to get healthy, because I feel like I've been going pretty hard for a while, and I think maybe a little reset would be good. So I'm going to do that. But I mean, I love this game, and this game's given me a lot in my life, and I'm very blessed and fortunate to be where I'm at. So I'm going to give this game everything I got, but I'm definitely going to, you know, take this process as kind of a learning point and being a little bit better with my with my recovery routine, and a little bit better with my kind of just staying in control, like in feel with my body. Cause it did freak me out a little bit whenever I didn't have control.
Yeah.
Like it just didn't feel like how it used to. So I'm definitely kind of going to go down that route of understanding how to control every little bit of your body. Cause I feel like that's also a huge thing in sports. Cause a lot of guys, you know, they'll just get into their weight room and they'll train. And that's all good. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, like, you have to have elite control of everything that you do. And you have to be able to move certain muscles and in ways and feel things about, you know, and feel things about, you know, how do I feel going down the slope? How do I feel? Cause a lot of guys just grab the ball and rip it, and that's all good. And if it works for them, you know, more power to it. But I'm a firm believer in, like, you have to be able to control everything that you do. And that's kind of something that I'm going to take a little bit more of an approach at this off season. Is I'm still going to train. I'm still going to do all this stuff that I just said. No, I'm not saying I'm not going to do that, but I'm definitely going to take a little bit more control of, you know, how does my hip feel in this position going down the mound? Like, where's my arm at in space in this area? Like, is it exactly where I want it to be? Does it feel a little lower? Does it feel slow? Does it feel too quick? I'm definitely going to kind of go down that route, because that's where command starts taking into place. And, like, that's where I believe true command lies, is that you have elite control of your body. Like, no matter what you're doing, and you're just creating a repeatable fluid delivery that helps you understand who you are. And then it allows you to be yourself.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I'm going to dive into this off season. And I feel like I'm going to become really good after it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, like I said, I'm hoping to go to spring training at some point in Florida. We're going to have to definitely do something. Maybe you, me. You know what we'll do is I'll start practicing my guitar, and we'll maybe do some karaoke or something.
Done. Sounds like a fair deal.
For sure. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on, man. We're going to have to do this again. For sure, man. Like, appreciate you taking your time, man.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.